On this episode of The Playbook, I have a legend, Richard Talheimer, the founder and former CEO of Sharper Image. He also has a new book just out, which is going to help us with our success, Sharper Image Success, Business Lessons from America's Gadget Guy. We're going to talk about how to be successful, how to build a brand, how to name your company, how to raise money, how to invest money. We're covering it all with the legend, Richard Talheimer. Join me next here on The Playbook.
This is Entrepreneurs The Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success and what made them champions on the field and in the boardroom. I'm your host, David Meltzer.
I have another legend here, Richard Talheimer. Talheimer, I'm going to get that right once in a while. Founder and former CEO of Sharper Image, author and manager of the Sharper Fund. Richard, thank you so much for taking the time to give us your journey and the lessons that you've learned along the way.
And thank you, David, for inviting me to be here today. I'm excited.
Well, I'm going to start right off with your new book because I can't wait to read it myself. It's called Sharper Image Success, Business Lessons from America's Gadget Guy. And it came out, a week ago, about December 8th, just came out, and a top new release, obviously. But, you know, why it's so interesting to me is I, in my 30s, ran the world's first convergence device. And that probably, if you remember back in 1999, there was all these awards for best gadget. And the Windows CE device that was manufactured by Samsung, it was the world's first smartphone in essence, was defined as a gadget. And we actually were speaking with Sharper Image as a gadget, you know, this dual mode chip. It was called the PCE phone. You may even have remembered it. It was the combination of a PC and a phone all in one. But I thought it was, you know, a perfect device, not for the carriers in the 90s, because they were still working on IOTA browsers and billing by voice, did not understand data. And I thought Sharper Image would be, you know, the innovation platform that would realize this great gadget, the great convergence device, which, you know, I didn't think I just spent $1,400 yesterday on an iPhone 12. So, you know, although in 99, that seemed like a lot, it certainly is. What was the vision that you had for that brand of Sharper Image leading the way to such extraordinary success?
Well, I'm a good example of someone who sort of just stumbled their way along and looked for opportunities. I call that management by opportunity. To me, that means you see something that works and then you expand on that idea and then find another one. The first product we ever sold was a runner's watch. I don't know if you remember that. We sold one of the first digital chronographs that you wear on your wrist for runners. And that led to another product and another product. And before you know it, there was a whole catalog of products.
And so, when we start with that runner's watch, because I do remember it because it was so expensive. Do you remember how much that watch was, just so you could share it with people?
Well, actually, what got me started was finding a runner's watch that was made to be as durable and as accurate as the Seiko chronograph, which was the first on the market. So the Seiko was 300. Mine was 70, 69.95. Oh, nice. So actually, that was our claim to fame, was we introduced the first affordable chronograph.
That's right. And then what's interesting is I remember thinking about the chronograph when they were giving them away at gas stations and they were selling them for $1.99 decades later. That's the great thing about innovation. One of the questions you probably never hear, but I believe life is about lessons. I believe pain is an indicator that we have lessons to learn. And what really is appealing about your book, The Business Lessons from the America's Greatest Gadget Guy, is that I think that our race is to learn as much as we can. In other words, the more we fail, the more we make mistakes, the more lessons we'll learn. You know, for you, what is your perception of lessons? How important are lessons to you?
Well, in fact, in my book, Sharper Image Success, I have a whole chapter called Fail Your Way to Success. And that's a chapter devoted to two points, really. One is that you have to try things if you're ever going to be successful. And some of those things you're going to fail. And the sooner you try them and the sooner something fails, the sooner you can move on to the next thing that might be really successful. I believe in that.
and you know, the lessons that you've learned, you know, it's been fun because I've had the founder of Home Depot, Arthur Blank, and the founder of Reebok, and you know, all of these great legends like yourself, all based on humility of, you know, look, this was not overnight success. This was a ton of lessons that I've learned along the way. And why now did you decide, like those other great entrepreneurs, to write this book?
Well, thank you for asking. You know, I've been out of the Sharper Image now for 14 years. And I just felt like I wanted to put my thoughts and get them down paper before those marbles and can't get it down on paper. So this was an effort. This was an effort to put it all together into one summary, maybe for my children, maybe for anyone that's interested in learning. Because I do believe that anyone who's struggled for 35 years to build something, you do learn a few things along the way. And if you could share it in a down-to-earth, plain language approach, why not? Let other people read it.
Absolutely. And one of the things I'm thinking of, and I'm blessed to be around great thought leaders like yourself and entrepreneurs, is I think, and I'm not, this is not a political show, but looking at both candidates this year, I think it's inspired a lot of the more experienced entrepreneurs to say, maybe I should write down what I've learned already. Looking at these two guys getting up into their 80s. Anyway, the other thing that's interesting is I love the name Sharper Image, and it's so iconic. It's so descriptive. It's so energetic. How'd you come up with that name?
You know, David, when I first started, I moved to San Francisco and did something to get me going in business. And that was to knock on doors in the financial district to sell copier, paper, and toner. Because back then, that was actually a business, selling paper and toner to replace the expensive brand name paper and toner that the manufacturers charged way too much for. So I was a paper pirate. And because I was in the business of copying machines, so to speak, I thought the Sharper Image name would work perfectly for that. And it would also let me create something bigger someday because it would include any sort of product I wanted to sell. And that's where it came from.
Was there any other advice that you would give an entrepreneur in naming their own business today?
Well, it's funny you should ask, because in the book, I feel like you read the book already, there's a whole chapter devoted to naming your company. And I point out that some names are really catchy and they last you for a lifetime and really make the business successful. I mean, think about these names. Zoom is a great name. Tesla turned out to be a great name. Shopify, that's a great name. These are catchy, strong names that last forever. Where, for example, one of my oldest competitors is a catalog named Hamacher Schlemmer. The founders. But it's not an easy name to use on the internet in today's world. You can hardly spell Hamacher Schlemmer. So choose your name carefully. It'll last a long time.
Yeah, Sharper Image is a lot easier on my tongue than even Tallheimer. So thank you for using Sharper Image as well. Now, we both have been in the innovation game. And for me, I joke around, but I was too early with the PCE phone, which probably wasn't the greatest name anyway. I like the iPhone much better. But more importantly, identifying the right innovations at the right time. What are some of the things that you've learned about? Because there's some great innovations, but they're too early, or maybe they're too late or saturated. The timing is as important as finding a clever innovation or a valuable innovation. How have you been so successful in not only finding the right innovation, but having the timing correct as well?
That is a very good point. You know, being at Sharper Image for that many years, I looked and saw so many different product ideas. Some we manufactured ourselves, some we bought from other people. And it came down to what I call the value-benefit relationship. Does the product deliver enough benefit for what it costs to be a good value? So, for example, when the first Segway was introduced, and you remember the Segway is a two-wheeled gyroscopic kind of scooter thingy, well, it was $4,500. And a very famous, rich, much richer than me, venture capitalist called me up and he said, I'm about to put a large amount of money into Segway. What do you think? He just wanted my advice as a gadget guy. I said, you know, it's a really neat product. It's a lot of fun, but it's way too expensive. Nobody's going to pay $4,000 to do what a bicycle does with an electric battery. It doesn't make sense. So it's not going to be successful. And he didn't believe me. The company lost about $100 million right after that, trying to launch Segway. And even though it was a clever product, and I've owned a couple of them, it's not worth $4,000. So to answer your question, it's a question of the value for the benefit. And also, is it something people want? Like, they used to want a video phone a lot. And that's why the video phones eventually came into being. People wanted that. They didn't necessarily want a two-wheel gyroscopic scooter for $4,000.
Just like you and I are both old enough, you knew that everyone that ever flew an airplane wanted to watch movies at their own seat. That was a guaranteed winner, right? I dreamed about the day I could be entertained in my own seat. Speaking of investment, though, you have dealt with a lot of VCs, investors, and innovation. There's an intuition involved. What advice do you give to an investor to feel confident in their own judgment when it comes to, you know, visionary investment?
Wow. Investing is my favorite subject. Since I've left Sharper Image, I really devoted my entire time to investing. And the Sharper Fund, which is a website, thesharperfund.com, talks about investing. And one of the classic examples I use is Tesla cars. I follow Peter Lynch's advice. Peter Lynch was a famous money manager, very successful, who always said, invest in stocks who have products that you understand and that you love and you touch every day. So I went to the Tesla showroom. I drove a Tesla. I was absolutely floored, not just floored with acceleration for the fast car.
Right.
But floored with the brilliance of this great looking car that was so incredibly different than all the other gas-powered cars out there. So I started to talk, and that's the key word. You buy in a little, and then you watch it for a week or a month, and you buy in a little more, and you watch it for a week or a month, and you buy in a little more. So 2 points there. Find something you love, a product you love to invest in, and then nibble in, average in. The worst that can happen is it soars and gets away from you. And so what? So you missed out. The other worst that could happen is it could go down in price, and then you'll be happy. You're nibbling in a little at a time, not all at once. So there's two things. Buy what you love, whether it's a product at the Sharper Image or a stock, and then go in slowly, average in. That's it.
And you did the same thing in building Sharper Image. You kind of nibbled in. You grew it slowly and carefully. Is that still the best advice that you would give to new entrepreneurs?
Well, I joke. I'm so jealous of the 24-year-old last week or a month ago who sold his new app-based business for $3 billion. I'm so jealous because I didn't do it that way. I just did it slowly over time, over 35 years. But it was a very satisfying way to do it. And that's the only way I knew how to do it. I'm not smart enough to come up with something that sells for $3 billion next week.
Yeah, neither am I. And if we were, we wouldn't be on this show. That's all right. We've had a few of them. And, you know, it's an incredible, audience today, right? I always wonder if back then we had accessibility to 4.4 billion people at a low cost, it may have changed the face of our valuations of our businesses that we've done well with. But there is an important, you know, an overused word today is authenticity. I use frequency. But behind frequency and authenticity is being original. It's being the first to market or the first one to move in the market, which is different. Why are these two things so crucial in business success even today?
Well, I love the concept of being first to market. And that's one reason that I've stuck with my Tesla investment over the past 5 years and built on it. Kept investing more because they were the first to market, just like the iPhone was the first real market mover in a smartphone. And first market mover in business meetings like this. So I'm a huge believer that being first to market is the giant advantage. Shopify is another one that is doing very well by sort of the first in their way. Even though PayPal is probably the precursor, but PayPal has been a great investment too. So first to market, that's a huge feather in your cap as a business.
One of the other things that I've always noticed as a customer of Sharper Image is the way that I'm treated when I come into the store. There are so many retail locations. And you really get to decipher between a retail experience when you're shopping, especially in the old days, walking a mall and going from shop to shop, you have a different energy or a different feeling when you walk into it. The two things that I've noticed throughout Sharper Image journey is that, number one, you feel differently. There's a different energy when you come in and you're treated differently. You know, it's almost like, oh, now I'm at the country club. You know, when you're in the Gap, there's a different feeling. But when I walked into Sharp Image, I felt like I was back at my country club. And, you know, it was more like, Mr. Meltzer, how can I be of service? Can I get you a drink? You know, this type of energy and service. How important was both that energy and the customer service that you provided at Sharper Image?
I love the concept of customer service. And Sharper Image was truly built on customer service. And for all of you who are thinking about how to do your business, let me just point out, it's a lot less expensive to keep a customer than it is to get a new customer. So if the customer has a complaint, if it's halfway legitimate, just give them their request. Because if you lose them, you're going to have to get a new listener or a new customer. And that's a lot harder to do than keeping the one you've got. So I truly believe in customer service. It's really one of the building blocks of Sharper Image, even in today's world. I mean, take Amazon, for example. I love Amazon. It's been one of my best investments. It's a great company, but people don't often notice unless they tried it. Amazon has a wonderful customer service. If you have a complaint or delivery wasn't made, they'll accommodate you. They rarely argue with you. I love their customer service.
I agree. One other thing I heard growing up all the time, if you want to make God laugh, come up with a well-developed plan. And, you know, as 35-year entrepreneur, as an investor in the stock market, you and I know one word that is never certain, and that's certain. In fact, I always tell my audience, if anybody out there knows exactly what's going to happen tomorrow, please let us know, because we know how to make billions of dollars. I'll give mine to charity. I'd love just once for someone to have certainty. But my greatest lessons have come from my greatest uncertain times, failures, mistakes, things not going as planned. What have those experiences taught you?
Yeah, well, as you're talking, I can't help but think of two of my favorite cliche sayings. One is, consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds. Consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds, meaning, of course, you can't always be consistent every day, every year. Things change. And the other saying is, I never change my mind until I have new information. And once you have new information, you may want to change your mind.
That's beautiful. Well, when I started running, I ran a sports agency called Lee Steinberg Sports and Entertainment, fairly notable sports agency. And my first project, Lee was gone. He actually was incapacitated, let's just say that, with his personal issues. I was negotiating a $900 million deal to buy the Rams from Georgia Frontieri with Franklin Financial. And I was way above my skis. And I got a great tip from Lee about negotiating. He told me, David, you know, never negotiate to the last penny, always be fair, and don't do business with dicks. I can imagine you would have some great negotiating tips for me as well.
Well, we share the same approach. In fact, I have a chapter about negotiation in the book, Sharper Image Success, that makes that exact point. You don't want to negotiate to the last penny. You want to leave the other side feeling like they won also. You both want to walk away feeling like you won something, not like you beat him to death. And I think that's a good way to build karma over the years, so that people come back and want to do business with you.
Absolutely. And, you know, dealing with change as well, in teaching people to deal with change. I tell people that we need to take inventory of our values every day in order to be hypocrites. Mm-hmm. And I think people, you know, are afraid to say they changed their mind. They're afraid to say they learned something. They're afraid to say that they're growing. But the biggest fear that I believe entrepreneurs have, and I'd love to see for you to share your experience, is asking for help. Where along the way are you able to acquire radical humility and realize you don't know what you don't know? I can't take myself so seriously. I really should ask for help. Where in your journey has help really come to an important factor in helping you and teaching others to ask for help.
Well, I do want to make the point that a lot of the sharper image was developed along the way because I'm a great believer in asking other people what they think about something that you want to do. So, for example, you're thinking of a new business, like we tried Sharper Image Spa, which was a catalog of spa accessories, or we tried Sharper Image Home, which was home accessories. But before launching them, I would talk to our customers. I'd say, hey, I'm sort of vaguely thinking about this idea. What do you think of this idea? And so they'd give me their opinion. And then later I'd ask a different person. And by the time I got to about the 10th person, what I always found was you began to get a strong consensus of opinion as to what the answer was. And it didn't take a fancy focus group. It didn't take paying a consultant. Just ask 10 people in a row and you'll start getting the answers. And of course, if it's a field you don't know anything about, like I don't know much about computers, software, you've got to hire somebody who's a software person. So you do need help in technical areas, of course, but there's nothing wrong with just asking. And we're afraid to ask sometimes because we feel like maybe it makes it seem like we're not very smart, but it's great to ask.
Absolutely. Last question. You know, this book, Sharper Image Success, Business Lessons from America's Gadget Guy. If I was recommending it to our huge entrepreneurial audience and they were saying, well, Dave, you know, why should I read this book? Why should I listen to it on audiobook or in other mediums out there? But why is this book so important to me? What would your answer be?
Only for this simple reason. There's lots and lots of books about business success, but I don't know that they're as down to earth and easy to read and fun as this book is. What most reviewers have said is it's a really easy, but you also learn some very solid lessons at the same time. So when you combine easy to read fun and some good lessons, I think that's sort of a winner. And try it. See what you think.
I think it's a big winner because it's not what you say, Richard. It's what people hear. And when you communicate effectively in that manner with, you know, fun stories, with great lessons, and, you know, something that's easy to understand is more important. I know Lou Holtz gave me that piece of advice one day. He said, Dave, it's not what you're saying, it's what they hear. And you got to make sure that they're hearing the lessons or else they're of no value to anyone. And you do such a great job of transcoding hyper-technical years of, you know, complex business and life issues into these, you know, clear lessons that can be utilized by the new entrepreneur, the experienced entrepreneur, and just in our everyday life. So Richard, I just am so grateful that you've come on to share the playbook, to share your new success book, which is called Sharper Image Success, Business Lessons from America's Gadget Guy. It's available from December 8th on. So grab it at Amazon or any bookstore or anywhere. I'm sure it's available everywhere, even maybe at Sharper Image. So check it out there. This is Dave Meltzer with an extraordinary playbook of Richard Tallheimer. Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of The Playbook as much as me. On a personal note, I just wanted to thank everyone for making The Playbook such a success. Don't forget to continue it by sharing, subscribing, and listening to your favorite episodes. This is Dave Meltzer with The Playbook.